This is the flight of Apollo 11 coming up in 9 minutes to the time when it will attempt to lift itself from the surface of the moon and rejoin the Columbia, which has been piloted for these many hours by Mike Collins, circling faithfully above, fixed in orbit up there. He approaching the point where the LEM will lift off, and he waiting, we waiting, and we'll continue in just a minute.
Let's talk about money. Money from GAC Finance. Money that helps more than 1 million people each year enjoy better living at an earlier age. Yes, many of the people who rely on GAC for help in money matters are young families. And it's understandable, because GAC Finance is a young, vigorous, and growing company. Each GAC manager is trained to understand the needs and desires of today's young moderns, and to meet those needs with sound advice on budget planning and the kind of money service they expect. GAC makes loans in amounts that vary from state to state. In Florida, for example, it's $600. In Illinois, up to $5,000. Check the yellow pages under loans for the limit in your state and the address of a GAC office near you. Stop in or phone and discover why young families who want better things to happen now ask GAC.
Reed Collins with Stephen Rowan in the CBS News Space Headquarters in New York, standing by in Houston, Texas, as we count down the clock about 7 minutes prior to planned liftoff from the moon. Neil Strauser, I imagine you are there and you're feeling some of the pressure as we are.
I suppose, to use the trite expression, it is with bated breath that we wait to see whether this will actually happen. And Reed, with us is our Grumman consulting pilot astronaut, Glenn Kingsley, and also a representative of the manufacturer which made this rocket engine. And we're all following very closely the transmissions between the moon and the ground as this countdown gets underway. And if we can be of any help, just call on us.
We certainly shall. And we know that Messrs. Armstrong and Aldrin would like to call on any kind of help they can get. They're getting marvelous, fabulous support from Mission Control in Houston, Texas. Yesterday, coming down to the moon, they played it cool, in the words of the flight controller who was on duty at that time, and they supported the mission fully. And now their second big burden, in lunar orbit at least, occurs, the burden of assisting these men to continue the glory of the flight of Eagle and give it wings once more. We are 6 minutes away from that time, the beginning of the ascent from the surface of the moon.
From nearly 250,000 miles up, it's a small world for sure. But to a truck driver traveling a moonlit highway, hauling a Saturn engine cross-country, the world looks a lot bigger. Trucks play a major role in America's space effort, just as they do in every part of our lives. For it's trucks we depend on to bring us the things we need and want. It takes an incredibly sophisticated operation to move a multi-ton vehicle to the moon. And it also takes the most sophisticated transportation system down here on Earth to move goods where we want them, when we want them. Getting out of highways what we've built into them. Helping to hold down the rising costs of transportation without sacrificing highway safety. B.F. Goodrich is a member of the ATA Foundation, the American trucking industry, and proud to be a part of this vital and progressive industry.
We're at T-minus 5 minutes now, 5 minutes to the ignition of the ascent propulsion system, which is designed to loft the men who have landed successfully and stayed on the moon, to loft them off that alien surface, get them back up into shape to re-rendezvous with Michael Collins in the Columbia.
Hot translation, 4 jet. Balance couple on. DTCA jet. Stop, push button, reset. Board stage, reset.
These are those final checks of the RCS reaction control system, the maneuvering thrusters, and also of the computers. This is to make sure that everything is go for lift off.
Their pre-ignition checklist. Prepare to stand by for 2 minutes to go to guidance steering in the ag.
They're taking off without the rendezvous radar turned on. The probably will use that later after the ascent. They're going directly up first. What they want to get is altitude, the pilot's old lifesaver first, and then get forward velocity.
3 minutes and 45 seconds to go. They've checked their abort guidance system.
Eagle Houston, you're looking good there.
Which is the backup guidance system. They've checked their primary guidance and navigation system. About now, they're starting a 16-millimeter camera in the window to get some pictures at
computer aboard the LIM, or aboard Eagle. I'll be loaded with the program 12, powered ascent guidance. We'll continue to monitor now at 3 minutes 12 seconds away from ignition as crew of Eagle goes through their pre-launch checklist.
That camera, I would imagine, will not be at one frame a second this time. I suppose they'll run it probably at the full rate of 16 or maybe 24 or perhaps even 32 frames to get a good picture of what that liftoff looks like.
And what they're looking for first now is 60,000 feet, if they can make that, and then begin the pitch over process and then begin to pick up speed relative to the surface of the moon.
It'll take 7 minutes and 18 seconds for them to make sure that they're in orbit. It's going to be a long 7 minutes because that engine must burn all the way, although a partial burn, a burn of 4 minutes or so, might get them into enough of an altitude that they could be rescued by the command module piloted by Michael Collins.
Oh, Mike up there has a veritable encyclopedia of cases, of possibilities, of semi-orbits, of strange orbits, of sudden engine shutdown.
Coming
a million things
minutes.
That he can respond to.
Mark, minus 2 minutes.
That's your guidance steering in the ag.
They leave behind them the descent stage of the lunar module, the American flag, the staves holding it extended. They leave behind them more than $1 million worth of extra equipment that they had to jettison for purposes of weight. They leave behind them the footprints that man first set on the moon on July the 20th, 1969 A.D. The A.D., the only reference in that plaque they left to God, a rather subtle reference that was inserted by the White House on the proposed plaque.
And that plaque is exposed, of course, on the rung of the ladder there. They read it.
1 minute to liftoff. Let's listen as the astronauts go through their final checkoff. A quiet pair. Each doing his job.
Guidance reports both navigation systems on Eagle are looking good.
Good, keep going.
Ascent in feet per second.
1,000 feet high, 80 feet per second vertical rise.
Almost straight up now
Eagle
during
Houston,
these first
eight. Request manual start override.
Roger.
2,600 feet altitude.
Nope.
7-minute-plus burn now that they must achieve.
Eagle Houston, 1 minute, you're looking good.
1 minute, you're looking good. Mission Control tells them.
Keep moving. Every second counts here.
130 feet vertical rise rate.
A little bit of slow wallowing back and forth. Not very much thruster activity.
Some slow wallowing back and forth.
Fine.
But the thrusters are not being overused, apparently.
150 up, beautiful.
Very smooth.
9,000.
Straight liftoff.
AAG degrees within a foot per second.
Looking very, very good, according to all the telemetry.
Houston, you're looking good at 2, ping, zags, and mid-spin, all agree.
2 miles up.
That's 1,000, 170 up, beautiful, 14,000.
Pitching over now to get that velocity.
Again, ags to ping.
The primary guidance, the pings, and the backup guidance, the ags, agree.
S-band looks like it's holding good, Houston.
The S-band antenna holding in its proper position.
Aldrin is reading the horizontal velocity first, and then the vertical velocity. It's now 1,424 feet per second vertical velocity. 187 vertical velocity.
Eagle Houston, your go at 3 minutes. Everything's looking good.
4 minutes to go.
Roger.
The next minute is critical.
What you need now, of course, are components of forward velocity and vertical velocity. Sailing up, this crater's getting smaller back below.
A couple of very cool men.
Right down US-1.
That's the Hypatia Rill. Really, they call it US-1, named after the road that runs in front of Mission Control in Houston, Texas.
Height's now approaching 32,000 feet.
So they got a good look to the south of them. Probably saw a Moltke, the crater.
Eagle Houston, 4 minutes. You're going right down the track. Everything's great.
Horizontal velocity approaching 2,500 feet per second.
Got Sabine off to our right now.
Got Sabine.
Roger.
In view.
Some 120 miles to go until insertion.
We'll be interested in the heart rates during this liftoff, the one thing that had to work absolutely. And the rate of ascent is being kept track of, as well as the downrange velocity, the lateral velocity. They're beginning to pick up more and more of it now, about 2,000 miles an hour.
That's what Mission Control meant by saying right on track. They didn't mean on any...
Looking at Schmidt Crater now.
Eagle Houston, you're great.
3, looking at 155.
All three data sources are agreeing quite closely here. The three-color plot board on the front of Mission Control here is almost superimposed as each of the three colors are scribed on the scribing plotter.
The two onboard computers and Mission Control's computers agreeing that everything is right on track.
They're about at the same altitude that they began that powered descent initiation yesterday. They're passing over some rough terrain now, much further to the west of the landing point.
And they're getting into darkness now.
Yes, Eagle Scott. Houston, you're still looking mighty fine.
Good agreement in Delta V to go in both Ag and Sting.
Roger.
Delta V is the increased velocity, the increase in velocity that they have to achieve for orbit. From nothing in this case to 3,774 miles an hour.
4,482 feet per second, horizontal velocity.
800 to go.
Aldrin reading out the rates to go.
Happy astronaut. Wait till you hear what Michael Collins has to say when they call him.
Am I on the engine on? 90? Okay. Up. 50. Shut down.
And they shut her down after 7 minutes and 18 seconds of burn time.
53373. 32.8 feet per second. 60,666.
Eagle, Roger. We copy. It's great. Go.
And we got
60,000. Now, the residuals, the difference between the optimum burn and what they really got. And not much to trim out.
Showing a Paraloon of 9.1 nautical miles, Apolloon 47.2 nautical miles on the pings.
Looks
as
if
three systems are go.
Looks as if they were just 1.5 feet per second slower than the desired velocity.
Cutoff velocity is showing about 55, 37 feet per second, plus or minus a foot or so on each of the three systems.
Well, if that's correct, then it's a couple of miles an hour faster, not slower than they had intended to go.
But that's a big relief to Mike Collins. That means that he'll have to do relatively
little
there.
Looks good.
And the Eagle itself should be able to fly its way back up to the Columbia.
That's good.
Okay, that sounds a little on the high side. Okay, Houston, we show 47.3 by 9.5.
Roger, 47.2 by 9.5.
And when they reach that
9.5, 46.6.
When they reach that stage at 47 nautical miles up, they'll try to even her out and make that a circle and maintain that constant height.
Michael Collins, ahead of them in the command module, Columbia sent back a message. Telling
Eagle Houston, request support stage reset, engine stop reset, load control at hold and get a chance
to. Telling them, I think, what he was getting on their speed from his computer and the radar system aboard the command module, and they thought that his reading was a little bit high as I got that rather garbled transmission. But there's plenty of time now to recompute it. They are in orbit. They're safely off the surface of the moon.
And that's the important point. I think let's pause now with relief for 10 seconds and station identification.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Studio St. Paul, Minneapolis, 830 WCCO at 74 degrees in the Twin Cities, 4.5 minutes past one.
I thought.
And this is the flight of Apollo 11 Eagle, now airborne, in orbit about the moon, having left that spot on the Sea of Tranquility. No longer is it the call sign Tranquility Base, it's Eagle again.
All right, Roger, Houston. Eagle is back in orbit, having left Tranquility Base.
easy behind the replica from our Apollo 11 patch, the Wallace Bridge.
Eagle Houston, Roger, we copy. The whole world is following.
I think that's a fair assessment of the feeling of the whole world.
Leaving behind a replica of their Apollo 11 patch.
Eagle Columbia, I've got 470 now for Ardon, and I just broke lock. Could you hold silent for a few seconds there while I require?
And although here we're hearing some garbled transmission, they now are in contact, and I suppose in excellent contact with Columbia, with Michael Collins in the command module, who's out ahead of them there as they head for that point. About a little more than half an hour from now, and they'll go around the corner and disappear from our view as they begin the maneuvers that will bring them together later this afternoon.
Well, I'm sure that our compatriots in Houston, Texas, must be breathing a sigh of relief at this time. Neil Strausser, what's the atmosphere like down there now?
Reed, I must tell you, at the risk of making it sound like a commercial plug, that just seconds after that ignition, when that first beautiful came over the Apollo line, the representatives of Grumman, which built the lunar module here, Glenn Kingsley, and the representative of Rocketdyne that built that asset engine, Jim Pierce, exchanged a very happy handshake. Just before that, Jim Pierce was telling me this was the palm sweating time. Jim, how do you feel about it now?
I just can't tell you how elated I am, and I know that all the people that helped build this thing feel the same way. And there's an awful lot of us worked on it, and we're just as happy as we can be.
We'll reach across the miles from New York to Houston and join in that handshake. It was palm-sweating time here, too.
Jim, you made the remark just before we came back on the air here that we can do anything now.
I think we can.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean anything in space that we've got the money and the manpower to do, we can do.
You think this safe I sent off the lunar surface proved it all out?
Yes, sir, I surely do.
Well, she's right on time, and your on-time average, Mr. Pierce, is certainly very, very good. I have a commuter rail line manager I'd like you to sit down with one of these days soon.
That's funny. All you New Yorkers, you New York area people, I hear you talking about that all the time.
I don't live in New York. I live in New Jersey, and that's New York to the 10th or nth, I think, somewhere, as far as travel is concerned. But it's fun. It's fun. Ever since the Martians landed there in 1938, things have been looking up a little bit.
Neil, we're lucky, aren't we?
We live outside Washington, and so long as you don't live on the wrong side of the bridges, it's not quite as bad, Reed.
We threw that in for a little bit of relief because even as other people do in a kind of a stressful business, it's nice to sort of break the tension a little bit as these men now are traveling over the dark side of the moon, still on the Earth side, but perhaps looking down at some Earth shine. But it must be a time almost for reckoning for Armstrong, for Aldrin, and for Collins, too, up there. Because although they have many miles to go before they sleep, they have accomplished really the major portion of the mission. I think gradually the miles are fading away behind them, and those times of stress are gradually coming down. What is about to be done now has been done before in lunar orbit with the mission of 10, the rendezvous. And we've gotten 8 and 10 back from lunar orbit safely, right on the money before. And so things once again become familiar in terms of experience, do they not?
What remains now is, one should say, routine, though still highly unusual in terms of the understanding of us Earthlings, I would say.
I'll feel a lot better, as will we all, those of us who've worked in this program, when that service propulsion system engine, that big 20,500-pound thrust engine on the service propulsion behind the command module, has burned its final burn to get them out of lunar orbit, a burn that, like all the others in this mission, somehow or other seem to occur behind the moon and bring them out, swinging out hopefully with a cry of joy as they head back to Earth, because then it's all downhill.
Stephen, perhaps a word here from Glenn Kingsley, the Grumman Consulting pilot astronaut.
I just want to second Jim Pierce's thought that we can do anything we want to, and Grumman is working on a ground transportation system. We'll be glad to help you out there also.
Well, now we're going to have to
commercial plug.
We're going to have to give your competitors equal time on that one, Glenn. I think isn't that that proposal's just been put out for bids by NASA, hasn't it?
I think it's not for NASA. It's Department of Transportation, but there are some others working on it too. There are any of a number of companies that can do a good job with the space age technology. Applying it to the commuter problem, I think we can come out real fine.
Perhaps, Reed, you could get from New Jersey to New York by way of the moon. It might be easier.
Mm-hmm. I was just reading out some of the heart rates during the ascent propulsion burn, and I believe they were 90 and 120 for one of the crew.
Neil had a heart rate of only 90, and that, for the man who has always had the highest of the astronauts' heart rates, is an amazing display of coolness and obviously great confidence. 120 for Buzz Aldrin, a little bit up for him, but obviously these astronauts were really in good shape as they lifted off the surface of the moon, and they were pretty sure that despite some indications that they might have a little bit of a pressure problem in those fuel tanks, they weren't excited. They weren't apparently fearful at all.
Of course, that liftoff, Aldrin has to read out all the systems, being the systems engineer. Maybe he has more verbalization to do and more things to watch. That's a possibility, perhaps. And when you're seeing it happen on rates and rates of ascent and then relative velocity to lunar surface rates, maybe that gives you a better picture and a better apprehension of really what you're doing. At any rate, they are in a satisfactory lunar orbit, which is satisfactory in terms of what must be done in the coming hours to get them back together with the orbiting command ship, the Columbia. And I'm sure that two men really have had some company up there, one another's, but Michael Collins has been all alone. He hasn't been idle. He's been extremely busy. He's been flying a ship that was, after all, designed to be piloted by three men for many, many revolutions of the moon. And I'm sure he will welcome the physical, human company of these other men, as well as the success of the mission when, once again, they climb down through that hatch tunnel.
If he looks back, he should be able to see their tracking light, that big bright light on the just above the front porch of the LEM, which has been turned on since shortly after they got into orbit, according to the flight plan at least, although we haven't heard any reference to it from either of the spacecraft. But that light throws quite a beam and can be seen, as Glenn Kingsley knows, from one end of Long Island to the other, and I'm sure that complete void of space and the complete blackness of space.
We got some slight conversation, but not really readable, at least not here.
I thought I heard Mike Collins say I could see something, and then it faded out. Just trying to find out whether I was right about him seeing that tracking light.
Eagle Houston in a blind, try a little bit, right? Over.
And now they're talking to the computers again, and, that's something that they do so much of the time.
3.8 signal strength, over.
Their next maneuver as they head toward rendezvous, of course, the times probably will be refined now that they're in orbit, but the next, the concentric sequencing, that is the effort to get into a circular orbit, will come about 36 minutes from now, and then once they've achieved that circular orbit, they will slowly catch up the last few miles and go into their terminal phase, and finally docking, which is scheduled to occur at 27 minutes after 5 Eastern Daylight Time this afternoon, which is 3 hours and 12 minutes from now.
And the flight of Apollo 11 continues as the attempt is still underway to get Eagle connected back to Columbia and to get one call sign again, which will then be once more Apollo 11, our coverage of which continues. Double-check your paint equipment before it's all systems go. Make sure this is a successful house painting mission by making Sherwin-Williams a part of your team. Check in at your Sherwin-Williams paint store today and let us equip you with the finest quality products. Choose from several outstanding house paints, such as Chem One Coat Premium House Paint, or easy-to-use Sherwin-Williams Latex House Paint, or SWP, for years the world's standard of quality in oil-based house paints, today even better than ever. We also have quality brushes, rollers, ladders,
Well, he suggests that he can stop the lamb anyplace. Eagle can... How blasé we've become about the fact that they're whirling around another body in space, which is whirling around our Earth, both of which, of course, are whirling around our sun. He says, I've stopped.
Well, everything is relative in terms of motion and time, I suppose. In fact, it is presupposed. If there were an atmosphere up there, Steve, you could almost imagine the wind whistling by, couldn't you?
Yes, you hear that that sound coming from the radio carrier. Brings back all the signals. No sound as yet from the command module, whose antenna undoubtedly is rotated in the wrong direction from Earth. As Michael Collins, 38-year-old, Roman-born, well-loved test pilot. Someone down in Houston said, everyone who knows Mike loves him. Great family man, fine fella, martini lover, we're told.
Eagle Houston, Middle Gimbal, and you might pass the Columbia. We don't have him yet. That's right.
If that letter were true, I imagine he's thinking how sweet it would be. It is that hour, even in Houston, Texas, I might say, 4:30 down there. Here on the eastern seaboard, I imagine it is well past the time of relaxation in many households. No time to relax up there, no time to give in to one's inner pleasures or those of the senses, because this is spaceflight, and this is the thing that demands of men all of the talent and skill that they have put into themselves. Now they draw it out.
This is, in fact, what they would call the name of the game. They're doing what they've trained for, the training that's gone on so many hours.
I'm not going to do a thing, Mike. I'm just letting her hold, attitude hold.
There's Mike, okay. He'll roll the command module around about 60 degrees to the relative axis of the Eagle so that the three latches that first touch and make the first contact will be lined up with the receptacles.
He's looking through a sight on the commander's window in the command module. And he looks right at a target, a docking target. And once he gets those lined up, then it's simply a matter of translating forward the required number of feet to gently push the two spacecraft together where those three latches connect. And then with the assurance that they're soft docked, they retract that probe, which has been reaching out in front, and pull themselves together into a hard-docked position. The latches all around the edge of the docking collar engage, snap over into a very firm docked position. Then the soft docking probe can be withdrawn from the tunnel after the tunnel hatch has been opened. And the conical-shaped target into which that soft docking probe is now probably just entering can also be taken out.
He doesn't have to hit a dead center. There is a variety of angular degree at which he can move in there, but it's pretty delicate. It's pretty exacting. And by now, the fatigue load on these men has got to be very, very heavy. They haven't really had any rest since when? Early yesterday, and they didn't get a whole lot then.
No, actually, they haven't had a good night's sleep since day before yesterday.
Collins, orbiting today, may have gotten a more sound bit of rest than some of the others, but he was busy most of the time.
They kept him up for an extra rev last night, and he only got about 6 hours and 45 minutes sleep, I think. In a lonely spacecraft last night.
Well, we recall that Jim McDivitt in 9, when they first tried this in Earth orbit, had a tough time doing it, and they got a barber pole that alarmed Scott, who then was flying the command module, an indication that they didn't have a secure latch. They backed and filled there for a little bit, Steve, and gave some people some rather long moments on the ground. And
especially
we learned
since they'd had a little trouble undocking.
Yes, apparently. They're getting into a position where the lock-on is not too good for communication.
Let's try to listen. In any case, for those words.
If he's coming in, he should have rolled right those 60 degrees that lines up his sight in the window with that standoff cross that sticks out from the lem and tells him where the target is. Closer in he gets, the further offset his angle of view, and so he can never see the drogue or the probe, but rather relies on the offset target.
All we've heard is Neil Armstrong telling him okay at one point.
I thought also we detected a little exasperated remark, maybe, that someone made up there as though... just a mumbled response now.
Has really gone sour on us at this moment, but we ask you to bear with us because we're listening for those all-important words. Neil Armstrong saying, okay, we're all yours, Columbia, but the response to that was some readout on cabin pressures from Columbia. Whether that means they are docked and just not bothering to tell anybody about it, we don't know.
That's a good possible thought, because immediately after docking, the command module pilot is to go to inertial and then pressurize his cabin to 5.5 pounds per square inch and
check the tunnel to a little bit less, the tunnel that separates the two. They're docked. That was a pretty one, Mike says. I didn't even feel a shock.
Were you guys, did it appear to you to be that you were jerking around quite a bit during the retract cycle?
It seemed to happen at the time I put the Plus Express to it. Apparently, it wasn't centered because somehow or other, that's when we got off in attitude. And then the attitude to hold for some sort of time.
A tiny bit of difficulty with the angle at which the spacecraft approached each other. And
be all right. I got a horrible squeal.
Yeah, I agree with that, but we hear you okay.
Neil Armstrong said that he used one of his thrusters to maneuver into a more exact attitude. And Mike Collins said I was sure
Houston
busy there for a couple of seconds.
Apollo 11, Houston, go. Adjust your O2 flow until it just goes off the peg, and then crank the direct O2 valve back down about 5 degrees. Over.
Well, you're really waiting for that one, aren't you? Okay, Ron, thank you.
Just the hint of what people are saying up there, really, Steve. Nothing that's really tangible in terms of understanding. You get the idea that everything's going all right. I believe Eagle, which now is joined to Columbia, and thus the whole thing is Apollo 11, is still having a little bit of problems that had cropped up earlier, perhaps in that environmental system in the LEM itself. In the meantime, Houston appears to be suggesting that Mike Collins crank up his cabin pressure.
Houston, I did that, and I believe we are flowing oxygen, but the gauge is just tank full scale low.
Roger, that's fine. That's what we expect.
They want the oxygen to flow through a vent valve from the command module into the tunnel. Pressurize the tunnel. With the tunnel check, so there's no question about it. They're docked.
Columbia, Houston, I have a new LEM wait for you whenever you're ready to copy.
He wants to, he wanted to get his own cabin pressure up to up to 6 pounds the square inch. That's considerably higher than the normal cabin pressure, and then he wanted to get the tunnel pressure up to 3 pounds to the square inch for a leak check. He's now, he says, going to go ahead and make that leak check. And he'll equalize the command module, lunar module pressure flow, and he'll inform the lunar module people when the pressure is equal. Leaving that couch that he's been flying in, he'll get down underneath and take away the hatch, verify the fact that the two spacecraft are properly latched together, take the probe and drogue assembly out of the tunnel and pass some stowage bags and that brush in through to the lunar module crew so that Armstrong and Aldrin can brush off all traces of lunar dust, clean themselves off and their suits off, and then stow the suits in those stowage bags that they'll receive from Mike Collins.
for the report from Apollo 11 from Houston Space Center. We join CBS Radio.
This is the flight of Apollo 11. I'm Morton Dean, CBS News, New York, at the CBS News Space Headquarters. The Apollo 11 is about to enter another critical phase of its historic journey. The firing of its main engine, a maneuver designed to thrust the spaceship and its three passengers out of the clutches of the moon's gravitational pull on a descending path towards Earth. The spacecraft is now around the backside of the moon, out of touch with mission control. It is during this period of time when acquisition of data is impossible that the engine burn takes place. Just about 10 seconds from now.
Burning at this time. Of course, that maneuver is performed on the backside of the moon. We have no data from the spacecraft here in mission control at this time. We won't know how the burn went for about another 10 minutes.
The voice of Doug Moore.
Which we're scheduled to reacquire Apollo 11.
At mission control in Houston. Quite obviously, this burn is critical, a life or death activity for astronauts Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins. And we'll have more news about it right after this message.
Take a moment to look around you at your friends and neighbors. Perhaps you've noticed more people than ever before are enjoying the better things of life, enjoying them at an earlier age, too. How? One reason is that they have learned to use credit wisely, to borrow when the need arises. In fact, more than 1 million people each year ask GAC Finance for money when they need it. And GAC does a lot more than just lend money. You get sound advice on budget planning, intelligent, understanding help, and the peace of mind that goes with knowing your financial affairs are in order. The amount that GAC Finance can lend varies from state to state. In Florida, loans are up to $600, while in California, the maximum is $5,000. Check the yellow pages under Loans for your state's limit and the address of your nearest GAC office. Because the wise use of credit takes the waiting out of living, people who want better things to happen now ask GAC.
In just about 9 minutes from now, we should learn from the spacecraft itself whether the SPS engine, the main engine of the Apollo 11, fired and whether it fired successfully. It is very critical that the engine fire the way it had been planned, according to the mission plan, in order to give it the proper reentry into the Earth's atmosphere. If it comes in too flat, it is possible for the spaceship to skid off of the Earth's atmosphere and bounce into an orbit around the Earth that will make it impossible to land. It is also possible that the... It is also possible that the re-entry of the spaceship
shut down at this time.
Could be too sharp.
At this point, Apollo 11 should be traveling at a speed of about 8,660 feet per second, or about 5,900 miles per hour, and should be on its way back to Earth, headed for a splashdown in the Pacific Ocean at 195 hours, 18 minutes.
We'll continue to pick up the words of Doug Ward, the voice of NASA.
With a successful burn, we should reacquire Apollo 11 in 7 minutes, 20 seconds from now.
Quite a kick from that large engine, boosting the speed of the Apollo 11 by some 2,200 miles per hour. We were mentioning that the angle of reentry into the Earth's atmosphere is very critical. If the angle is too steep, it is possible for the spaceship to be crushed and burned. But so reliable is this engine that most of the astronauts have no fear of its use and do not consider this as critical a maneuver as many those of us who watch the space shots do. Today was a very busy and successful day for the spacemen. The moon explorers successfully linked their landing module with the command ship following a beautiful do-or-die lunar blast-off that started them on their long journey home. The 12,000-mile chase through space ended at about 5:35 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Monday, when the lunar lander Eagle, flown by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, caught up with and joined the Columbia mothership, flown by Mike Collins. Collins easing the docking probe of the Columbia into the locking mechanism aboard the Eagle, and Armstrong and Aldrin had caught their ride back home. The Eagle, of course, was not equipped to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. It was jettisoned and is consigned to eventually crashing the lunar surface. Before re-entering the command ship, Armstrong and Aldrin had to vacuum sweep their spacesuits and the inside of their lunar lander to remove as much moon dust as possible. Most scientists doubt there are any germs on the moon, but have taken all precautions possible to hold down contamination in the event they do exist. And that is the reason why, when splashdown occurs on Thursday and the spacemen are lifted aboard the carrier Hornet, that they will immediately be placed in 21 days of an incubator period, brought to Houston and carefully tested for the possibility of contamination. We're now 135 hours, 29 minutes, and 20 seconds into the flight of Apollo 11 as we await reacquisition of signal in about 4 minutes or so. The Apollo now on the backside of the moon. We have no knowledge whether the main engine was fired on schedule or not. It would be possible to fire on the next revolution if Mike Collins, Buzz Aldrin, and Neil Armstrong decided that they could not gear the engine up in time for firing on the 31st revolution. They could wait to the beginning of the 32nd revolution. We'll return with more of the flight of Apollo 11 right after this message.
The whole world's closely following three men right now are Apollo 11 astronauts, the most famous travelers the world has known. But I'd like to call your attention to some everyday travelers we often take for granted. They're the men of 16 million trucks. It takes that many trucks to haul America's needs, because trucks haul two-thirds of all the food we eat, plus getting gasoline to our service stations, newsprint to our newspapers, and even Saturn rockets to our launch pads. You name it, they truck it. And these drivers have a safety record that's the best in the nation, rolled up while driving over 190 billion miles a year. That's about the distance of 400,000 round trips to the moon. Impressive? The people at B.F. Goodrich think so. As a member of the ATA Foundation, the American trucking industry, we're pleased to salute these thousands of travelers who safely deliver the goods.
In a little less than 3 minutes, we should hear from Apollo 11 as it comes around from the backside, the dark side of the moon, and begins the long journey home. If all has gone according to plan, the main engine should have been fired approximately 8 minutes ago to boost the speed of Apollo 11 up from approximately 3,600 miles an hour to 5,700 miles per hour. It's quite a kick, consuming some 10,000 pounds of fuel. Firing on schedule would mean that splashdown on Thursday would be, as NASA indicated earlier today, almost precisely as figured at the time of blastoff. That being 12:51 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, splashdown in the Pacific, to be witnessed not only by millions of Americans, billions of persons in other countries around the world via television, but witnessed in person by President Nixon, who is scheduled to begin his journey out to the carrier Hornet sometime Tuesday evening. While we're waiting acquisition of the signal from the U.S. spacecraft, there is some information about the Soviet Union's Luna 15 satellite, which reportedly landed on the moon Monday, about 2 hours before Apollo 11 blasted off the Sea of Tranquility. Sir Bernard Lovell, the chief of the Georgell Bank Observatory tracking station in England, said signals from the Soviet craft immediately before it dropped out of orbit indicated that it could have been damaged or destroyed in the landing, but he did not rule out that the mission was going according to plans. There was little said in Moscow except that the spaceship had landed on the moon. Lovell said that Luna's signal showed
that... This is Apollo Control. We're now less than 1 minute from reacquiring Apollo 11. When last we heard from the spacecraft, all systems were looking very good. And we were in very good shape for the trans-Earth injection maneuver. At this point, Apollo 10, Apollo 11 should be about 10,000 pounds lighter and on its way back to Earth. We're now 32 seconds from reacquiring. We'll stand by for communications with the spacecraft.
Anxious moments, 25 seconds from that point at which Apollo 11 curves around the edge of the moon and communication, voice communication, is possible. At just about this second, Houston should make its first try at contacting Apollo 11.
AOS, and there's the cue. We have acquisition of signal.
Position of signal. Now mission control awaits word concerning the firing of the engine. The
and
angle.
We have data right on schedule. Roger.
Telemetry
zero
data.
Minus 0.7 minus 0.2.
Telemetry data, as expected, coming before actual voice confirmation from the Apollo 11.
Hello, Apollo 11, Houston, how did it go, over? Help open up the LRL doors, Charlie. Roger, we got you coming home. It's well stocked.
There's the good news.
Okay, burn status. Delta take was zero. Burn time was 2 plus 3, 0. They had angles, delta ATX after trim was 0.1, VGY 0.9, VGC 0.1, delta VC minus 17.9er. Fuel 10.6. Hawks 10.4, unbalanced minus 50. Roger, copy, Neil. Sounds good.
Neil Armstrong in Apollo 11. The engine has fired. Preliminary indications that the Apollo 11.
Apollo 11, Houston, all your systems look real good to us. We'll keep you posted. Looking good here. That was a beautiful burn. They don't come any finer.
Right. A beautiful burn, many finer. Three very happy astronauts, and we'll get back to the flight of Apollo 11 right after this message.
Sherwin-Williams A100 later.
Nitrogen tank, it didn't leak a bit. Didn't leak a bit this time, over.
The news continues to be good. The news Roger, flowing Roger. Between Houston, Mission Control, and Apollo 11.
The latter part of the burn started oscillating a little bit and got down a little bit below 100. Roger. 96 or so. Roger.
That big main engine of the Apollo 11 fired on schedule. Increasing the speed of the spaceship by 2,200 miles per hour. Enough to relieve it from the clutches of the gravitational pull of the moon and head it towards Earth.
Most of the conversation so far has been from Neil Armstrong and Mike Collins. That last comment came from Collins. Our first report after acquisition was from Neil Armstrong.
The voice of Doug Ward in Houston. So, the Apollo 11 moon explorers have fired their final big rocket blast, and they're heading home to
claim their page in history. They'll have to wait 21 days to claim it after being placed in isolation, complete medical and physical debriefing. The 2.5-minute burn of the Columbia command ship's main engine rocketed Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins out of lunar orbit, and TEI, trans-Earth injection, has been accomplished. Thus, a continuing good flight, the flight of Apollo 11. This is Morton Dean at CBS News Space Headquarters, New York.